It is my pleasure and my honor to introduce our speaker tonight. This is Sia F. from Los Angeles. Let's give her a big District 22.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Nice crowd. My name is Sia. I'm an alcoholic too. I'm exhausted. I have to take a nap after all the excitement. I mean, I wish you guys would cheer up a little bit or something. Thank you. Cool. So I want to thank you for inviting me here. The committee invited me, but I've been very welcomed by folks. And I want to thank Jim for coming with me. There are particular individuals on the committee who were real helpful, Steve and Bob. And I want to thank all of you. And speaking of Rich, that we spilled something all over the place here and he threw himself to the ground and cleaned it up. The guy is like a hero, you know what I mean? And so I'm impressed with your Alcoholics Anonymous program here. Thanks so much for having me. It's wonderful. And I want to welcome the new folks. This is good AA. I mean, there's good AA everywhere, but look at this AA. And if you don't know yet, it's good AA. People are committed. People are rooting for you. People are happy to see you. You know, I hate people without a program, and so this kind of AA would scare the hell out of me. It scared the hell out of me, and it was the making of me. And so I wish you well on your journey. There is an answer here if you have an inability to stop drinking when you want to. Maybe you feel like your life is over. I don't know how you feel tonight, but I'm glad you're here, and I look forward to maybe meeting you in the line or meeting you on the road to happy destiny. It's funny how paths cross with people. So my sobriety date's January 30th, 1983, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I want to tell you what I used to be like, what happened, what I'm like now. That's our standard format, and it's very helpful to me. It was very helpful to me when I came here because I was one of those people where, exactly as this says, you helped me when nobody else could. I'm going to tell you something. I'm a person who kills myself, and I did so unsuccessfully. But what I know from that, there were people who wanted to kill me. Believe me, if you knew me when I was drinking, you'd want to kill me too. But I'm the only person who did, although unsuccessfully. So what I know today is I am the most dangerous person in my own life. And it is important for me to remember that. But the other thing I know is, and the book says this if you're new, I won't remember with sufficient force the remorse, horror, and hopelessness the night before. How am I going to remember it 42 years? And there's people here with more sobriety than that. It's a daily program. It's a daily program because alcoholism is incurable and fatal and progressive. And I don't know how that struck you when you first heard it, but I'm also a recovering know-it-all. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you said, you know, this is an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind, I thought, I know when I drink, I get an obsession for you and an allergy for my boyfriend, you know, so give the book to somebody who needs it. That's how I was. But I want to talk to you about what I was like before I drank. I came from an alcoholic home. That ain't why I'm alcoholic. I drank my way into this thing. But I saw alcoholism. And there was nothing about it to recommend it to me. My father was a self-professed alcoholic in my home. And I'll tell you something. I love alcoholic men. You're very charismatic. I've married a few of you and dated most of you, you know? I'm less dangerous today, I hope. And if you're here and I married you, I'm sorry, okay? Blanket amends. And my father was the first alcoholic. I loved him. My father was this very charismatic guy. And my father was a cool person. My father, first of all, my father was big. So it was interesting to come in here and hear about powerlessness. Because I thought, no way. My dad, when he lived, was, for my money, about one of 17 people his size on the planet. My dad was 6'7". He played All-American college ball in Madison Square Garden. He was a gifted athlete. He got attention in the newspapers. He had a lot going for him. The problem is he was an alcoholic. And so my father got removed. You know, it ain't personal alcoholism. We get removed. We drive drunk. We aren't the only people driving drunk either, but we drive drunk, we get removed. How about you don't make the car payment, you don't show up for work? I got removed. I don't know about you. What about showing up for the relationship? I didn't show up for the relationship, so they filed, you know. And so my father got removed, and this was a terrible thing to me. And yet when my father drank, you know, he was the alcoholic who would come home and miss the driveway and park on the lawn and fall out of the car, and I was the little kid waiting up for him. I'd hear the neighbors tell him to go away because he'd start going, knocking on the neighbor's door, and I'd feel humiliated for him. I heard people call my father a loser. I wanted to kill them. You know, this is the family disease of alcoholism. You know, we were kept indoors a few years ago by this thing that was contagious. Alcoholism ain't physically contagious, but it's spiritually contagious. It affected everybody in my family, it did. And so my heart was broken by my father. And this powerless thing when I came in here, I just didn't buy it. But here's the thing. I missed the bus the first two times coming in AA here. But the third time around, here's what I understand about powerlessness. It's this paradox. You can't understand it. When I came in this time, not only did I know I could not stop drinking, but I knew I was going to die from this. And so this was powerlessness. And I didn't have to have anybody explain it to me. But I do not think that you can explain it to somebody who ain't. It's just not communicatable. That's not a good word, but you know what I'm saying there. So I came from this alcoholic home, and I had spiritual malady. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I didn't identify. I love that word in AA, identification. And I didn't identify, I think, in the places normal people do. I didn't identify with my own family. You know, my family were nice-looking folks, and I was this tall, skinny thing with buck teeth and scraggly hair. That's actually a direct quote from a police report, so, you know. Funny to you. And I was mad. I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I ain't a person who just overdrinks. I overmarry. I overlike people who underlike me. I underdress. I overdraft. I'm just furious, you know. And one of the folks I was overmarried to said to me one time, "You know something? I actually think that you are the angriest person I have ever met." To which I replied, "That makes me angry, you know, because I had nothing with a hole in it, you know." And so I'm uncomfortable in my family. And then I went to kindergarten, and it got worse. And look, you know what's in kindergarten? These things called people. What are they for? You know what I mean? Because they're looking at me like you're looking at me, and they're thinking things without my permission. I felt like dirt about myself, that's one thing, but they ain't got a right to be thinking, you know. And my problem in kindergarten is there were like too many of them to kill, you know. So that was my fundamental problem. And I was a very disenfranchised kid. Sometimes disenfranchised kids join gangs, and I was one of them. The problem is I took myself into this gang. This was not something I understood. There are many things you explained to me. And you said, wherever you go, Sia, and that's the problem. And so I was this disenfranchised kid, and I got involved in this gang. There are probably other people here who got involved in a gang. But I'm kind of a loudmouth. And you know, some gangs have colors, and this gang had colors. And I thought they were ugly. And I felt it was important to give some feedback, you know what I mean? And, you know, we read the traditions, but we ain't the only organization with traditions. Other people have them. They just don't call them that. They're customs, rituals. So they started paying attention to me, this gang, because I was saying stuff they didn't appreciate. And just so you know how dangerous I am, this gang is also known as Girl Scouts, okay? Yeah. Do not mess with me, right? And, they have this thing, if you're unfamiliar, called Girl Scout cookies. It's a big deal to them. And I was doing something funny with the Girl Scout cookie money. Okay, I was like cooking the books. And so this was their opportunity to uninvite me to be a Girl Scout. And I have actually had the pleasure of meeting a lot of people, a fair amount of folks in AA, that have also been thrown out of Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts. You know, we have a little cluster group there. So anyway, what this is, when I talk about it, it was the beginning of a fatal progression. If you're new, that talks about the trajectory of our drinking. But it also could have referred to the fact that as I went on in life and as I drank, I became uninvited to every organization I became a part of, up to and including my own family. I know I ain't special. This has happened to many of us. But that's what happened. I would not drink, though. I was afraid of alcohol. I was afraid of what it did to my father. And when I was 17 or 18, though, I was in a local college watering hole. And you know, the book talks about the alcoholic is tortured by loneliness. I would look at people in their families. I would look at people in church. I would look at people in Girl Scouts. You looked like you were having the time of your life. I had this funeral going on in my heart. And so I was in this local college watering hole, and I just couldn't stand it. And so I took a drink. And it was no big deal. It was a beer. And I cannot tell you if it was the first sip of this beer, or the middle of the glass, or the bottom of the glass, or the bottom of the evening. I got no idea. But somewhere along the line, that thing the book talks about, the effect produced, I believe, happened for me. And because this problem I had all my life of looking at you in all those places and you feeling a part of and me not, it like packed its bag, put its hat on, and it walked out the back door of my life. I'm going to tell you something. You got a problem as big as that one was to me, maybe my first obsession. You know, we're obsessive thinkers. I'm going to get my hands on that solution as often as I could. So I began to drink as often as I could. I grew up in Montana. We have reservations in Montana. And I began to drink on the reservations. And the reason that I drank on the reservations is those folks did not have my family's phone number and could not call about my behavior. I don't know what you're like when you're drinking, but I'm kind of interesting. I'm going to talk. By the way, that fellow who did the countdown, that guy rocks. Okay. That guy rocks. Is that guy married? Okay, just kidding.
No.
Okay, so anyway, I like men, as I think I've expressed to you. And I think I was born fed up, I know that. And I also think I was born with Adidas on, because I'm in a hurry, you know? So when I see some guy I like, when I'm drinking, I just don't see, why mess around? I don't even need your name. I just take my clothes off. That's how I announce myself. And you know, I did that once like at a wedding reception, and I was not the entertainment, ha-ha. That did not go over well. The other thing, though, is if the person I'm interested in doesn't go along with the program, I get kind of upset. And so I like chase them with a knife. Now, I never worked at Benihana's, okay? And I do not know martial arts, but there I am chasing them with a knife. And I ain't telling you it was thousands of men, but it was a pattern, you know? And when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know how you felt, but I felt so hard done by. I was such a victim. My life was your fault. And as I've been here, I've seen some things a little bit differently. And one of the things that I saw differently one day is that I was kind of lucky, because not one of those guys that I chased with a knife turned around and said to me, okay, let's see what you got. Because, you know, I'd have been in trouble then, and that didn't happen. And I started to understand as I was here with you that life didn't give me such a bad break, that I had a lot to do with the wreckage of my past, a lot. So anyway, that's kind of what I was like. When I drink, I think I get hope. You know, I'm a spiritually bankrupt person, and I want to feel that feeling till the end of the line, and so I stay out all night, and then I come home in the morning. My parents had separated at this point a lot because of my father's drinking, and so my father wasn't there, and one of my brothers took it upon himself to call me out for behaving like that. And you know something? I don't take that from anybody. I won't take it from my family. I'll kill you. I'll kill the whole family, you know? And I got in a fist fight with my brother, and my mom had to get between us. And this is when I became the unwelcome hanger-on in my own family. my mom had to ask me to leave. And so now I'm drinking in Beverly Hills. And when I talk about this part of my story, what I think of is that line, you know, there's lots of lines in the book that resonate with us. And one of them is whistling in the dark. Because I would not or could not look at what drinking was doing to me yet. And I started kind of dressing things up. I was lying to myself, I was lying to you. And yes, I was drinking in Beverly Hills, but the part I left out conveniently with myself is I was drinking at the bus stop in Beverly Hills. That's a little bit different picture, you know what I'm saying? And I ended up drinking at this rough bar downtown in Los Angeles. It was called The Good Night, and if you ever come down and visit, I wouldn't check it out. It's a rough bar, and when young women drink in rough bars, sometimes stuff happens. And what happened in this bar, there was another young woman who drank there. I didn't make friends with her. I didn't make friends with women when I was drinking because men were human-sized credit cards, you know, and women were competition. But she ended up with her head blown off in the vacant lot behind the building this bar was located in. I don't know what kind of violence was in your drinking. That wasn't typical of mine, and it frightened me. And this is when I started to try to control my own drinking. This is when I said to myself, instead of you saying it, hey, maybe you should back off this a little. Maybe you have had more than your fair share. Why don't you chill? But you know, I could say that to myself just like you might have said it to me. I just did something else. I just started drinking behind my own back now instead of yours, you know. And it is kind of a funny turn of phrase, you know, but here's the thing I know. I've been sober a long time, and I was out there a long time, and lots of stuff happened to me then and now, because life's in session. People you love die, stuff happens. But of all the things that have happened in my life, the worst thing that will ever happen in my life, bar none, is the fact I was unable to stop drinking when I wanted to. Because you know what that is? We're human beings. That's what separates man from animal, free will. I didn't have that anymore. I lived like an animal. I felt like an animal. I hated my guts. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we call that the bondage of self. A couple of things happened that propelled me into the program. First of all, around this time, God forbid if you go home and your place has been tossed. I went home for 2 weeks before I noticed my place had been tossed. I mean, come on, who lives like that, you know? And the other thing that happened is I was looking out of the window of the place where I was living one day, and I saw this guy walking down the street with a shotgun. Hey, I'm from Montana, I know a shotgun when I see one. And I thought that was pretty out there. And in retrospect, I would say to you, I think I was blessed. At the time, I felt lucky for what happened because this guy crossed the street, came into the courtyard upstairs to my door, and I knew he had a shotgun, so I wasn't going to open the door. But I didn't know what to do, and my mind was racing. You know how Bill Wilson talks about that in his story. And I was thinking, I didn't recognize this guy. I thought, what's he doing at my door? Is it the people I live with? Because I lived with those kind of people. Did I do something to him in a blackout? Is that what he's doing here? And I mean, I would have said that about people. They would have said the same thing about me, the folks I lived with. I had no idea. And so I just stood there as quietly as I could. It felt like it lasted 1,000 years. And then, I don't know why, I heard footsteps going back down the stairs. Maybe there was a commotion in the courtyard. And this problem walked out of my life. When I think of this moment, what it reminds me of is another moment that began to happen. And I guess it happened to you, or I don't know what you're doing here on this nice Saturday night, where I would come to or wake up, and I started saying to myself, I ain't doing this anymore. I'm not going there. I'm not hanging with those, you know what, I'm gonna turn this around. And I would say that to myself day after day after day, and it never changed. I'm talking about obsession of the mind. There ain't an off button for that. You know, I just felt like bashing my head against the wall or getting run over by a car. What do you do about it? And so this is when I really wanted help. I don't know when that happened for you. I ain't a helpable person, I'll tell you that much. I don't know exactly why that is. I'm a kid from an alcoholic home. Maybe I don't believe. I don't know. There were folks that tried to help me before I came to AA. There were the folks with a little clerical collar trying to help me see life through a more spiritual lens. And then there's the ones with diplomas on the wall, and they're going to help me with my feelings and my thinking. And then there's the ones with the gun and the badge, and okay, I know what you're doing here, and let's go. But you knew what I knew about every single one of those people underneath all that jazz. They're just another lousy human being, you know, just like me. You know, you ain't going to get anywhere with somebody like that. Here's the remarkable thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, which continues to be the case. You know, I've been sober a long time, but it ain't like that's something great that happened a long time ago in Bethlehem, no disrespect. AA continues to unfold and open up this spiritual world to me. So, I needed some help. And the thing about you is this, Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm talking to you all, representative of it. I got no defense against the first drink, but I got no defense against Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I came in the door here, you said to me, you know, nobody was inviting me back anyplace. And you said to me, Sia, you ain't a charity case. You're welcome here. We're all here to get a day. It's an even playing field. I did not feel patronized by you. I bet those professionals weren't trying to patronize me, but I had that wall up. I felt something here that I felt nowhere else. That's what I'm doing standing up here tonight. So a little time passed, and I was sitting someplace waiting for the obsession of the mind to hit, and I read about Alcoholics Anonymous in like the community service section of the newspaper. And it said something like, we hold hands, we pray, and we don't drink anymore. I'm going to tell you something. When I read that, I thought it sounded as corny as hell. That was my first reaction. And then I heard this other voice speak up. And I've heard other members of AA say they had this experience. And it was a quiet voice. And it said, I want to go. And that voice got the swing vote. And so I went to my first meeting. And it was a nice meeting. It was a daytime meeting. And there were people at the door. You know, they had it going on. They had somebody greeting. There's a lady who gave me her number, said she'd sponsor me. They put me in the front of the meeting because I was new. And the meeting starts. And I got an attack of self-centered fear, just like in kindergarten. And, you know, I wanted to get the hell out of there. But I was too embarrassed to get up and leave. Fear of people is one of my 100 forms of fear. And so I just shut down. I heard nothing in that meeting. And at the end of that meeting, I got the hell out of there. I don't care about your book. I don't care about your steps. I don't care about your traditions. I ain't calling that lady. That's how I get help. And I went home, and something happened. I was there a couple hours, I guess. And here's what I saw. Here's what I noticed. That thing, I don't know about you, but in my own case, that I cannot pay away, pray away, hide from, outwit, outweigh, negotiate with, that thing called obsession of the mind, that thing was gone. And the only way that thing ever budged is if I had a drink. And I hadn't had a drink. I'd ask myself, you know, did ya? And I didn't have a drink. And I'll tell you something else. You'd never convince me, excuse me, you'd never convince me that Jim did it, or Rich did it, or any individual alcoholic in that meeting did it. I never bought that in a million years. But something happened in that meeting. I knew that was so. And that moment has been the dividing line of my life before and after. I drank again. I could never forget you, though. I've been looking over my shoulder ever since. And I want to talk for a minute about this, because I believe this is why I missed the bus a few times in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have this program, and I got a little mixed up. There's a lot of talk about addiction, and we have people among us who have addictions. But the weird thing about alcoholism, see, addiction is normal. You use an addictive substance, you're going to get addicted to it. I am, you am, grandma, dog, we are. We're going to get addicted. Alcoholism is abnormal. It is not normal. And this ain't something that two guys talking together in 1935 came up with. No disrespect to Bill and Bob. This is why we have Dr. Silkworth in the book. you know, sometimes people say, you ain't a doctor. No, I ain't. Alcoholics Anonymous has a doctor, Dr. Silkworth. And he did this little case study for like 30 years, watching us die around him. And he figures out this is an allergy. Okay, so like fewer than 10% of people who drink become alcoholic. That's the allergy. I got other allergies. Do you? Like, I got an allergy to penicillin. And I'm going to tell you something. I'll stake my life on this. We're recording. I ain't scoring a shot of penicillin again in this lifetime. That will never happen unless some medical personnel makes a mistake. So, and let me bring up another allergy. How about the people who are allergic to peanuts, the peanaholic, okay? You think a peanaholic is going to pursue, you know, if their throat swells up, they die. Are they going to pursue a peanut into the gates of insanity and death? Hell no. But how come? How come we do? How come we die and die and die in front of people who love us, who want to help us? The Al-Anons here, the people, you, how come? And it's because of that second feature that Dr. Silkworth identified, obsession of the mind. I still got it. That's where alcoholism is incurable. I got it, man. I pitch a tent over resentments, okay? I pitch a tent over things I hate, and you're never getting away with it. Alcoholics worry different than regular people. This is where it lives, you know? And I didn't understand that, and that's why I kept going out there. So for what that's worth, no extra charge. I'm passing it on. Okay. So I was on what we call a pink cloud for a couple of weeks. I was ecstatic. I was leaping out of bed. I had a new freedom and a new happiness. I was making plans. I enrolled in a class, all that stuff. But I was sponsoring myself. And if you're here tonight and you're sponsoring my, and you don't have a sponsor, yes, you do, and they're an idiot. It's you, okay? That's what they said to me. No holds barred. I did the research. You don't have to do it. Please, just take. I ain't here to promote AA either. We have a tradition where we don't promote, but I'm going to tell you something. Nothing else worked for me. By the time I came here, even though I hate people and I hated you, I'm an equal opportunity hater. But here's the thing that was different. You had the same problem I did, because people would stand up at podiums like this and talk about their drinking and their thinking, and I identified. And my big question was, understanding all of that, how come you ain't drinking? How? How? We can, you can, and you did help me when nothing else could, including me. That's the astonishing thing about you. That's why I would take what I considered to be insults, intrusion, inconvenience, you know, because you could do something I couldn't do. You could do that. So anyway, I was having the time of my life, leaping out of bed, but something in the book says self-reliance failed us, and I was self-reliant. I didn't have a sponsor. I hadn't gone back to AA. Here's what I figured. Well, if something comes up, I'll be right back. I was very grateful to you, you know, but I underestimated alcoholism. And a couple of weeks passed, and I decided to go someplace to see somebody I always had a bad time with. You ever have somebody like that? You know you're getting in a fight before you go there. And it was no different. And I got in a fight with this person, and then I blew my sobriety. And then I wanted that thing to happen that had happened in the first meeting, the surcease of the obsession, you know what I mean? And I went to a meeting, and I wonder, what line do you stand in for that cup of coffee? I had no idea how to summon that. I had no program. I had no defense. I didn't even drunk that day that I went, no defense, and I just got swept out of the doors. My alcoholism was a lot bigger than my program. That's simply what happened. And I ended up in London, and just took the bus. I was modeling. That's what I called it. I don't know what you'd have called it if you'd seen me in action. And you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm in the I can't club. I'm a terrible employee. I just can't show up. And I was walking down runways with my dresses on backwards and walking out of shoes. I showed up for this photographic thing, and I'd been out all night, and they took pictures, and I got the pictures back. You know what? They showed me the pictures. My face was bloated. My eyes were bloodshot. Not a vision for you, haha. You know. And then, so they canned me right then and there. And as I walked out of the door of that agency, it felt like the Bank of England called, and I owed them money. I was overdrawn at the bank. And you know, this is where the book talks about you can't separate the true from the false. I thought I had a lot of money, and I did not have a lot of money. And the book talks about God is everything or God's nothing. And you know when God's everything to an alcoholic like me? When there's nobody else to call. And I had one phone number from this woman who'd seen me in action in that business. And she went to AA, and she said she'd take me. So she took me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back. And again, I was given sobriety. But there's something in the book that talks about a demand is different than a request, you know, that thing. And I had my little secret agenda. For the privilege of being sober with you, certain things should arrive, you know, in my lap, I guess. And the deadline, whatever that was, came and went. And it hadn't happened. And so now there's another thing the book says. There's one who has all power. May you find him now. And you know what? That day his name was Gerald. Because Gerald offered me a proposition to take me out of the country. You know, a little geographic. And so I reverted to type. I meet Gerald at Gatwick Airport. Gerald is arrested by the federales. They came swooping down. They arrest Gerald. And they arrested the tickets, which was a lot more upsetting to me. You know, it's that thing in the book, take a trip, not take a trip. And I didn't have enough program for not take a trip. And so I went home and I blew my sobriety. And then I did something I didn't understand. And there's many times, if you're new, when I've done things I didn't quite understand because I'm compelled sometimes by the spiritual power of Alcoholics Anonymous when I can't even name it. I went to a meeting. What was I doing there? I was sitting there wondering, what are you doing here? And I was not going to ask you what I was doing. I was sick and tired of you telling me the score, you know? And so I was sitting there just steaming. And I'm thinking and I'm thinking and I'm thinking. And here's what I came to understand. I don't know what meeting it was. I don't know what person was talking. I don't know what they said. But somewhere along the line, I crossed that invisible line. Not the one between a normal drinker and an alcoholic, but the one between me and you, the eternal separation. I identified in AA, and Alcoholics Anonymous became my home. And I was in trouble, and I went home. That's what happened. And there was a stranger in that meeting. And maybe this is why, at the end of the meeting, I went up and told him a little more than I'd normally tell people who I'd see again. And he listened politely, you know, like we do. And then he wrote a phone number down, excuse me. He wrote a phone number down, and he said, you know what, Sia, if you got 6 months of your life to give, why don't you work this program as Bill sees it, not as Sia sees it. He wasn't being a wise guy, he just said it straight up. And then he walked away. And now I'm standing at that turning point like we describe when we read How It Works. And I'm going to ask God's protection and care with complete abandon. Or the unsaid thing is, I ain't, you know. And I have stood in that moment with new people because you did it with me. And I have said to them, here's my number. I'd be glad to help you out. Give me a call. And sometimes what they say to me is they can't. And that's a lie. The real answer is you won't. Because you can dial a phone. Do you know what I mean? Like I can get in the car and come here. You can dial a phone. And that's a life or death difference to understand that. And that day, with no other offer on the table, if you're here and you feel desperate tonight, we know that feeling. But you know something? That feeling may propel you to do something you wouldn't have done otherwise. So I dialed the phone. And I was talking to a total stranger. But this person knew what they were talking about. They were an alcoholic, like us, you know? And they started to tell me stuff, and I told you I'm a recovering know-it-all. And so I'm hearing stuff I already heard. And my heart starts to kind of sink. And then they said this to me, and this was Clancy, who turned out to be my first sponsor. He said, Sia, if you want to clean up your act, maybe we can help you. You know what that is, if you're new? That's what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous, the flimsy reed. That's what it is. And so I got on a plane, bad out of hell airlines maybe, I don't remember, and I came to Los Angeles, and I got sober in the Pacific group, one alcoholic yelling at another, you know? Right, that's true. And you know, I don't have a drinking problem. If you have a drinking problem, AA is going to work great for you. But I found out I don't have a drinking problem. Clancy told me I had a living problem. And you know what? That makes a lot of sense to me. You know why? I'm alive. That's a problem. And that's what I'm doing with you. Because I start thinking I got this incurable thing in me. And and there it is. You know what I see alcoholism as now? We get our own way of seeing it. I see it as an iceberg. And the tip of the iceberg is a symptom. You know, that's the unifying force in our community. But the whole underbelly of that iceberg is the spiritual malady. And that is what sunk the Titanic, and that is what sunk me those two times. It's all of those defects of character coming to play, leading me down the garden path where there is no happy ending. So I came to the Pacific group. I hated their guts. That's what I'm like. I left everything behind me, and I'm going to tell you, they were wonderful to me, but I'm a spiritually illiterate person, a spiritually bankrupt person, a completely self-centered, terrified person. It is only somebody like you that can get through to me, and Clancy got through a corner of me. And I went to my first meeting. They gave me rides. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a place to live. They put me up. I go to this first meeting to the home group, which is big, like 1,200 people at one time. Big, man. And they didn't look like alcoholics to me. You don't really look like alcoholics to me either, you know? And the guy that gave me a ride noticed I was having a little bit of a psychotic episode. And so he said, well, you know, you're here, so you might as well stay till the end of the meeting. And I thought, that's easy for you to say, dirtbag, you got the car keys, you know? But I didn't say it. And I went in the meeting, and I sat down. I heard nothing. And at the end of that meeting, I got up, and I was heading for the exit. And I would love to ask that person I was all those years ago, where are you going now, Sia? Where are you going now? At that point, coming into AA the third time, by then I had been uninvited to one entire country, thank you very much. And I was living illegally in another country, which they knew, and I knew they knew. It was so uncomfortable, but I was used to living so uncomfortably, you know. And I had problems, man. I had a secret, too. I happened to be married to two people at the same time. I tried to treat it like an accounting problem. You know, one of them found out, and so I tried to explain it away, and he just cut me off at the pass. He goes, what do you mean you lost count? It ain't a high number, 1-2, you know? So I just, nobody was buying my story. And so anyway, I'm heading for the exit. I don't know where I was going to go. And this guy cuts me off at the pass, so to speak. And he says, how would you like a coffee commitment? I felt like saying to this guy, how would you like me to kick your ass? You know, I was so scared. But I was also so chicken, I didn't say it. Instead, I said, well, you know what? I'm only going to be here 2 weeks. And without missing a beat, he goes, okay, so take it for 2 weeks. You know, I felt like I'd been shanghaied into sex slavery or something. I was so mad. And here's what happened to me in that moment. I didn't understand it. It takes a while, if you're new, in my case anyway, to kind of get on board with something spiritually is happening here. And what it is this. That thing that had eluded me the first two times in Alcoholics Anonymous, it is the unicorn of my sobriety. It is the pilot light that I protect against all things. It is why I appreciate you inviting me to participate in your sobriety. It is why I appreciate being asked to sponsor. It is why I have commitments. It is why I study the literature. I do happen to be the type of alcoholic, if you want to hide something from me, put it in the big book. I was like that for a while, but I'm reformed now. And so you know, I'm that kind of person. And what it was, it's that $100 word in Alcoholics Anonymous, surrender. And I actually do not think I surrendered. I think I was surrendered by the sobriety in the room, by the synchronicity in the room, by what everybody was focused on in the room. And it reminds me of something. I'm an excellent swimmer, and I underestimated the situation, and then I was drowning. I underestimated it like I underestimated alcoholism. And, you know, I was drowning. And the body fights. It fights, and then there's nothing left. And there was nothing left. And then out of nowhere, there was something to stand on. And I could just get my head out of water. I got air, you know. I lived. It was such a surprise. You are such a surprise. You are so not what I thought you were. That's the impediment of alcoholism, feeding me a lot of crap. You know, if you're new here, let me tell you something. I felt like dirt about myself. I had good reason for that. I was an alcoholic woman. I felt terrible about myself. But I'm going to tell you something. You ain't bad, but you are the location of a bad problem. And you are powerless, but that is not an excuse. It's a reason. We got certain things only we can do, like I get in the car and come here, like you dial a phone if you need help, like you take a commitment, the contrary actions that I hated the Pacific Group's guts for that saved my life, because they would say again and again, you don't have to believe in it, Sia. Just do it. That's what we did. That was the carrot. That's what drew me on. Thank you for telling me that. You told me the truth. You didn't care about my feelings. You cared about my life. All these things. I remember Clancy saying to me one time, you know, you're always going to be a few streets over from the parade. Okay. I'll live with it. You know what I mean? I just love being here. I love being here. I got a few more minutes, five more minutes, I guess. Let me tell you, some wonderful things have happened, and a lot of people with time, tons of people with more time than me here. I want to tell you one of them that was a weird and wonderful thing that AA gave to me. I told you I hate people, and I hated my parents, and I hated my mother. My mother was somebody who didn't have Al-Anon. She was an untreated Al-Anon, and she screamed a lot in our home. And I hated her guts for who she was. I thought, doesn't somebody know what's going on in this house? And I was never going to forgive her, you know what I mean? And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and we do the work we do here. I did my first inventory, and it was 168 pages long. I hated anybody I ever knew, and I remembered every damn one of you, you know what I'm saying? And I read it to this woman, and she was a German lady. And her hair was kind of messed up by the time I was done. This was so funny. And she looked at me and she said, this is what she said, you don't have to be a goddamn pervert anymore. And I was a little taken aback, but I mean, there's ways of saying you don't have to live like this anymore. Okay. So one of the people I hated was my mom. And you said to me, you know something, Sia? That's a resentment. And it says it is the number one offender, which, if you didn't notice, is a pretty high number. And you said, you want to drink over this? Hell no, I don't. So you said, okay, take contrary actions. You always cornered me with that. You want to drink again? And so I would take contrary actions with my mom, try to be helpful to her. And it felt like it went on forever. You ever do that thing of trying to keep count? Because AA is not going to screw me, you know? And this day came, and it was a strange thing that happened. Like, maybe I didn't have a chip on my shoulder anymore. And my mother told me that when she was a kid, she went somewhere, and she was assaulted. And she tried to tell her mom about it, and her mom just couldn't believe her or wouldn't believe her. And when my mom told me this, she just collapsed, you know, and she was at my feet. She was just sobbing. And here's the thing. As I was looking at my mom, something like that happened to me. It happens to a lot of kids. And I said, I ain't telling anybody about this. I'm never telling anybody about this. And when I came in AA, what you said to me, Sia, you're going to stay as sick as the secrets you keep. That's called selfishness. That's called pride. And so one by one, I had divested myself of these things that offended me and frightened me, and I didn't want you to know. And as I was looking at my mom, here's what I realized. I'd been healed. You know, I'd pitched a tent over that resentment. And you said, you're going to keep something you hate, or you're going to hand it over. And I apparently had handed it over, even if only by action. And I looked at my mom, and I realized she didn't have Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I had a moment of compassion for my mother. My heart broke open with pity for her. I was able to love my mother. This is something Cubby Selby, many of us knew him, said, a beautiful thing about that. He said, the most sacred ground is where an ancient hatred is turned into a current love. And I have been able to love my mother and my family. I have been the big book walking into my family. I ain't saying I'm all that, but AA's all that. You know, AA's all that. It heals families. You gave me my family back. I didn't even want my family back, you know what I mean? But Alcoholics Anonymous, it works in spite of my permission or not. And so I think my time is up, and I love being here with you. Thank you for the 12-step call, Alcoholics Anonymous.